hello and welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, as ever, your host, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. Archaeologists have been exploring an ancient site in Wisconsin. We have news that the 16,000-year-old Meadowcroft Rock Shelter in America is to reopen. And I was going to report on megalithomania, but I just can't seem to bring myself. So, yes, I'm off to a Croatian island soon, so I hope to find evidence of King Arthur's Atlantean spaceship landing pad pyramid. Or perhaps not. Anyway, returning to reality and America, Fort Jackson's 9,000-year-old history is revealed. We then jet across the world to a Mesolithic cave discovered in North Sumatra, then a fascinating report that farming sites in Syria date to the 10th millennium BCE. Melting ice islands and Canadian mountains reveal ancient tools, and once again the secrets of human history is extracted from ancient DNA. We have an exclusive report here. Finally, ancient Tasmanian artifacts are threatening a highway construction. Now, before we go on, I hope you've all had a chance to read and see the images for the Tomba della Scacciare, the checkered tomb on Sardinia that was found by Stone Pages, yes. But if not, the high-res images are going to be going on to the Past Horizons magazine, which will be coming out on Thursday. Yes, this Thursday. Issue 12 it is, and you can find it at www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. Traffic will one day rush over an archaeological site off Highway 26 near Lake Koshkonong in the USA, where a group of Milwaukee archaeologists believe they found remains left by some of Wisconsin's earliest residents. For weeks, archaeologists from the Great Lakes Archaeological Research Center have been excavating prehistoric American Indian artifacts on a two-acre strip of land just south of Fort Atkinson. The dig is being done through the Wisconsin Department of Transportation in anticipation of the expansion of Highway 26. Finding a pristine site like this is very exciting and very rare, said Ricky Kubicek, an archaeologist with the Great Lakes Archaeological Research Center, as they are finding artifacts exactly as they were left by the original inhabitants. Kubicek supervises a crew of 15 archaeologists who are under a tight deadline to complete the work as quickly as possible. The crew will work until August and hope to unearth about 50% of the artifacts surveyors believe exist on the property. Crews are using soil analysis to find deposits known as middens. Middens are recognisable because they create breaks in the normal soil layering. While crews have found no human remains on the site, other items include pottery and tool fragments from the Woodland People, an ancient native group that lived in the region 2,500 to 800 years ago. One significant artifact unearthed is probably a fulsome point, a type of stone spearhead used by hunters in the Paleo era, one of the earliest prehistoric cultures in Wisconsin. The bulk of artifacts found at the site will be sent to UW-Milwaukee for further analysis of their composition, age, and exactly what culture might have used them. Currently, there are no plans to make the site a protected historical site. Remaining in America, the Meadowcroft Rock Shelter and Historic Village, a National Historic Landmark located in Avella in Pennsylvania, USA, reopened on May the 1st. Meadowcroft features a 16,000-year-old rock shelter, the oldest site of human habitation in North America, that provides ancient evidence of how the first Americans lived. The new enclosure at Meadowcroft Rock Shelter provides visitors with a unique, never-before-seen perspective into the oldest and deepest parts of this internationally renowned archaeological excavation. To learn more about Meadowcroft Rock Shelter and Historic Village, then go along to www.heinzhistorycenter.org and click on the Meadowcroft tab. Heinz History Center is HeinzHistoryCenter.org. And again, staying in America, a large-scale excavation at Fort Jackson in South Carolina has revealed evidence of archaeology dating back 9,000 years, well before the US Army took up residence there. Artifacts from the archaic period provide invaluable insight into the anthropological history of the region. It was until relatively recently that human camps were believed to be concentrated solely along the major rivers of Wateree and Broad. Fort Jackson is situated many miles away on sandy uplands and was not considered a valuable area for investigation. Five locations at Fort Jackson Dig have now uncovered sandstone hearths, quartz knap tools, weapon points and pottery. Stone artifacts suggest these humans were mobile, with the stone used coming from as far as Georgia and the Carolina coasts. The natural geography is ideal as a point where the nomadic groups would stop, and the two natural springs and veins of quartz would have provided enough incentive. Initial investigation started in 1989, prompting a ban at Fort Jackson on any development of the land. However, the demand for more barracks at the base have now called for an acceleration of the archaeological project to secure the history before it is lost to construction. There are no immediate plans to start building at this stage, however. Well, so much for the ban. Get in there quick, lads. The three-story cave, which is located in a hilly, densely forested area of North Sumatra's South Dempo sub-district, has two distinct entrances, seven rooms, and most remarkable of all, ancient human footprints. Natural sedimentation, however, has caused the walls of the cave passage to narrow. Local residents are familiar with the cave and regard it as playing an important role in local tradition, with stories about the cave being created by a hermit who then used it as a home. Evidence of a carved bed in one of the rooms suggests that it's unlikely that the cave is a wholly natural formation, and the fact that the cave's walls are uniformly carved through different types of rock indicate that the cave is probably man-made or at least heavily altered. An additional 2-meter-deep chamber was also described as being part of the cave complex, but is apparently inaccessible to all but expert cavers. Manto said that there are many ancient sites in the area, but lack of knowledge on the part of the local people leads them to attribute mythological and ritual importance to these places. The historical significance of the sites is usually only discovered by the locals through media publication by experts in the field. So I'll have to find out more about that one. Assistant Director of the Syrian Department of Archaeology and Museums, Dr. Yerte, said excavations at the site of Tel al-Abar has revealed information about the communities that settle on the banks of the Euphrates dating back to the 10th millennium BCE. Excavators have uncovered two different areas that include three communal buildings and dozens of circular houses built from limestone and paved with pebbles from the river. The structures contain various flint tools such as blades, knives, sickles, arrow tips and hatchets, tools used for leatherwork and crafting straw mats, stone mills and pestles, pottery fragments and animal bones. Dr. Yerte pointed out that the first communal building in the site contains a huge circular hole with a diameter of 12 metres. A clay terrace inside the building contains limestone blocks decorated with the engravings of animals, geometrical shapes and even the sun. The floor is made of clay tiles painted with lime, while the ceiling would have been supported by huge wooden pillars. The second communal building is also circular with a diameter of 7 metres, consisting of 5 chambers with a square stone support pillar in its centre. It contained flint and stone tools, stone pottery and a figure representing the mother goddess. It even had a clay figurine representing a half-human, half-animal. Yerte believes that the findings indicate that the two communal buildings had a social and ritualistic role. He also said that the site plays an important role in answering questions regarding the emergence of farming in ancient times, as it clearly shows the characteristics of an organized village with a number of structures serving various purposes. Now, from the heat of the desert, let's go to the cold of the Yukon, where in 1997, sheep hunters in the southern Yukon discovered a 4,500-year-old dart in caribou dung in a patch of melted ice. As the site was investigated, it was found that annual snow and caribou dung were deposited in layers that also contained numerous artifacts and the mummified remains of birds and small mammals. Caribou used these ice patches to seek relief from heat and insects, and ancient hunters observed this behaviour and used it to their advantage. Greg Hare, the Yukon archaeologist who examined the 1997 finds, reported that they had recovered more than 200 ancient hunting artifacts, with the oldest dating back more than 9,000 years. Ice patch archaeology was born. These early ice patch discoveries led archaeologist Tom Andrews of the Prince of Wales Northern Heritage Centre in Yellowknife in the Canadian Northern Territories, leader of the International Polar Year Ice Patch Study, to wonder if the same phenomena could be found in the Mackenzie Mountains. In 2000, he raised enough funds to purchase satellite imagery of particular areas of the mountain range, which forms the border between the Yukon and the Northwest Territories, and began to study the ice patches. This was followed up in 2005 by a four-hour helicopter ride to further investigate two of them. This initial trip was a success, and they even found the Willow Bow. Early success meant federal funding was forthcoming, giving Andrews and his team, which included the indigenous Shuta'otin, experienced in local lore and local knowledge, the opportunity to explore eight ice patches over 4 years. Things that they found included spear-throwing tools from 2,400 years ago, a 1,000-year-old ground squirrel snare, and even an 850-year-old bow and arrow. The implements found are truly amazing, with complete examples of ancient technology, including arrows with wooden shafts, feathers, and sinew hafting. These artifacts are giving us an entirely new appreciation of how ancient hunting tools were made and used. Radiocarbon dating of the dung shows that the ice patches have been used by the caribou for some 6,000 years. Biologists are now studying plants, insects and pollen remains to learn more about caribou diet, as well as analysing their ancient DNA to reveal more about population genetics and migration patterns. The evidence can also be used to learn more about environmental changes over time. However, while Andrews and his team hope to monitor some 20 ice patches over the coming years, they have now run out of funding, and two of the ice patches originally investigated have already disappeared. He stated that the ice patches are continuing to melt and that we have an ethical obligation to collect the artifacts as they are exposed. If left exposed, the artifacts will dissolve in the acidic soils or be trampled by the caribou, and in a year or two, they will be lost forever. The story of this race against time is told in the book Hunters of the Alpine Ice. That's going to be on my list, and I'll just pop along and get it now, actually. Let's see if we can find it on Amazon. The genes of individuals who lived thousands of years ago is providing information not only about them, but the history of their species and ours. Genome sequencing of DNA extracted from Neanderthal remains is being used to map and compare the genetic code from early and modern humans. Dr. Webb Miller of Pennsylvania State University, a professor of biology and computer science, has led several of these studies. The results of these genetic maps highlight similarities and differences in the basic anatomy and physiology between our species, Homo sapiens, and the species Homo neanderthalis. This data allows scientists like Miller to see which prehistoric populations have contributed to modern DNA and which has died out completely. Since Neanderthals and modern humans coexisted in the same areas, a major question to be answered is whether or not any Neanderthal genes are incorporated in our own genome. The Neanderthal Genome Project is expected to publish results soon. They may shed light on differences in brain development between the species and the evolution of speech and language. DNA also provides information on human migration patterns. Miller reports on a recently published study of a man who lived in Greenland 4,000 years ago. His DNA shows that he was part of a group of people who had come from northeastern Siberia 1,000 years earlier. Scientists were able to determine that the man resembled modern Asians with brown eyes, dark skin and hair, and they may also have been balding. It may not have been easy to extract DNA from ancient remains, and in Greenland, researchers used a tuft of hair found in the permafrost. According to Miller, hair has been found to be a very good source of genetic material. The extreme cold of the environment contributed to the preservation of the sample. Genes also provide a rare view of our ancestors. Work on a single gene in 2007 revealed that some Neanderthals may have had red hair and light skin colour. Miller is quick to point out that the goal is not a Neanderthal version of Jurassic Park. Genome sequencing between species helps us to understand human disease and genetic diversity. For non-human animals, this can be used to preserve endangered species like pandas and captive breeding programs. But Miller jokes that he is not trying to bring back extinct individuals. He's just trying to keep the ones we've got. A recently discovered Tasmanian Aboriginal site is at the centre of a dispute between the government on one hand and archaeologists and members of the Tasmania's Aboriginal community on the other. The site, located north of Hobart, lies in the path of a major Tasmanian highway. The site contains approximately 3 million artefacts, some of which are up to 40,000 years old. Those who wish the highway bypass to be rerouted contend that its construction could damage this important site. Important because the artefacts would provide a rare glimpse of what everyday life was like 40,000 years ago in hunter-gatherer groups, not just in Australia, but perhaps in other parts of the world as well. Most of the artefacts are stone tools, and finds like these are infrequent, according to the site's archaeological director. Tasmania's Department of Infrastructure, however, believes that a bridge over the site is adequate to protect it. A representative of the Tasmanian Aboriginal Centre states the construction of a bridge and the removal of the artefacts are not acceptable solutions. The Tasmanian Heritage Minister will make a decision based on the concerns expressed by all groups. I have to confess that actually building a bridge over the site, I can't really see that as protecting it. Ah, the joys of politics and archaeology. And now, a couple of extra pieces of news for you. First, by the time you hear this, issue 12 of Past Horizons Adventures in Archaeology magazine should be up. So head on over to www.pasthorizons.com/magazine to get the latest from archaeology around the world. And second is, I'm afraid, I'm off to Croatia to continue our survey at the Belly Eco Centre on Tres. It's spelled C-R-E-S, but pronounced Tres. So, I get back on the 22nd of May, and you will, I'm afraid, have to miss out on two podcasts. Let's hope I have some great news of my own to report on when I return. But before I go, can I just remind you that there are many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as the UK Heritage Calendar, on Badger, www.bajr.org. And the Badger Federation is going great guns, and currently we are discussing unionisation in archaeology, among other interesting topics. So you could always make BadgerFed, that's BAJRFED.co.uk, BadgerFed.co.uk, a nice place to stop in at the beginning of the day and just see what's going on in UK and European archaeology. Well, until I get back from Croatia, do take care, and I will see you in 2 weeks.